with the Stingray clan verified that they weren't going to be sending anyone to this party. They'd be expected, but were too busy with their preparations to leave the city. That left a hole we would hopefully be able to wiggle through. Around the rear of the tower, we found a less privileged class of people gathering to be carted up a smaller service elevator. "Ready?" I said.
"Ready,"
Megan said. Her voice was echoed by those of Mizzy and Abraham, who spoke over my earpiece. I had it tucked up under the illusory hair Megan had granted me. Nighthawk was confident our lines would be secure. Prof had bugged our phones in Babylar, but he'd needed to physically place those bugs in the actual handsets, and we'd replaced that equipment. "Engaging," I said. Megan and I started running. We jogged up to the crews working the back door and pulled to a stop, struggling to catch our breath as if exhausted.
"Who are you two?"
the guard demanded.
"Cake decorators,"
Megan said, proffering the invitation, which for workers like us was more an order to appear.
"Stingray clan."
"About time," the guard growled. "Get searched and I'll put you on the next load up."
Loophole loved fancy cupcakes. The Stingrays always sent a pair of cake decorators, even when they didn't send Carla or other important people to attend the party. My heart was thumping as we stepped over and relinquished our backpacks. A stern woman began unzipping pockets.
"Step one, pass,"
Megan said quietly into the line as the guard pulled out our electric mixers and placed them on the table with a thump. Various cake decorating paraphernalia followed. I didn't even know the names of most of the stuff, let alone how it was used. All of this had taught me one thing. Cake decorating was serious business. After a quick frisk, we repacked and were ushered ahead of other workers into a dark, salt-walled room with an elevator shaft. The shaft didn't have doors, which seemed terribly unsafe.
"We're in two," Abraham said. "One floor up."
They'd snuck up using the Earthich. Abraham had created steps out of mercury up to the second floor. Then they'd melted their way in through a window using a specialized pressure washer that delivered a small jet of water strong enough to cut stone. They'd used it on one of the windows turned to salt. Megan and I were loaded onto the elevator, which was a small ramshackle thing lit by a single light bulb. The two of us were joined by three other workers, servers in white uniforms.
"Go,"
I whispered. I thought I felt our elevator shake as Abraham and Mizzy latched on to the cables above. They zipped up the lines using the devices Larsener had made for us. A few seconds later, some distant machine started whirring, and we began to rise. The climb was slow and tedious, with nothing to see. Most of the levels still had doors on them, indicating the floors weren't used. Mizzy and Abraham would have to slow their climb before each of the upper floors to peek out and make sure nobody was in the hallway beyond. The elevator quivered and shook, occasionally grinding against the sides of the shaft, gouging out chunks of salt. What if Mizzy's or Abraham's device slipped and they fell? What if they spotted someone in one of the upper hallways, where the elevator shafts didn't have doors, and were forced to wait while the elevator approached, threatening to push them into the open? I wiped my brow, and my hand came away grimy with salt dust and sweat.
"We're safe,"
Abraham said into our ears.
"No problems. Unhooking on the 68th floor."
I relaxed with a sigh. It took us another few minutes to pass the open doorway where Mizzy and Abraham had climbed out, but we saw no sign of them. They still had a couple of floors to climb before reaching their target on the 70th floor. But Tia's plan indicated this floor would be less likely to be guarded, something Larsener had confirmed. I let out a prolonged breath as light flooded us from the 71st floor, an old restaurant filling the top of the tower and our target. We piled out, the servers rushing to join others who were already delivering trays of food to the partygoers. Megan and I carted our packs into the kitchens, where a veritable legion of cooks used hot plates and skillets to prepare dishes. Large lamps had been clipped to parts of the ceiling, bathing the place in sterile white light, and they'd set out plastic over the floor and most of the old countertops. I wondered what they did when they wanted to salt a dish, scrape some off the wall? It was all powered by several thick cords that ended in a set of overtaxed power strips. Seriously, there were a ton of them. To plug in something new, you'd have to unplug two other cords, which I was pretty sure violated some law of physics. Megan tried to get information out of a passing server, but was interrupted by a call of,
"There you are!"
We turned to face a towering chef who had to be nearly 7 feet tall. The man stooped as he walked to not bang his head on an old salt light fixture. His face was so pinched he looked like he'd been drinking a lemon juice and pickle smoothie.
"Stingrays?"
he bellowed. We nodded.
"New faces. What happened to Susie? Ah, never mind."
He grabbed me by the shoulder, dragging me through the busy room to a smaller pantry on the side, where they'd set out ingredients. A helpless-looking woman in a small chef's hat stood there, overlooking a single tray of unfrosted cupcakes. Her eyes wide, she held a small tube of frosting in sweaty hands and regarded the cupcakes as someone might a row full of tiny nuclear warheads, each labeled, "Do not bump."
"Pâtissier is here," the lurchy chef said. "You're off the hook, Rose."
"Oh, thank heavens," the young woman said, tossing aside the tube of frosting and scrambling away. The tall chef patted me on the shoulder, then retreated, leaving the two of us in the little pantry. "Why do I get the feeling there's something they aren't telling us?" Megan said. "That girl was looking at these cupcakes like they were scorpions." "Yeah," I said, nodding. "Right. Scorpions." Megan eyed me. "Or tiny nuclear warheads," I said. "That works too, right? Of course, you could strap a scorpion to a nuclear warhead, and that would make it even more dangerous. You'd have to try to disarm the thing, but wow, scorpion!"
"Yes, but why?"
Megan said, setting her pack on the plastic-topped counter.
"Hmm?
Oh, Loophole has executed 3 different pastry chefs so far for creating substandard desserts." It was in Tia's notes. The woman really likes her cupcakes.
"And you didn't mention this because?"
"Not important," I said, getting my own pack out. "We aren't going to be around long enough to deliver any pastries." "Yes, because our plans always go exactly as they're supposed to." "What? Was I supposed to take a crash course in decorating?"
"In fact," Cody said over the line, "I'm not too bad at cake decorating, if you must know."
"I'm sure," Megan said. "You going to tell us about the time when you had to fix cupcakes for the Scottish High King?"
"Don't be silly, lass," Cody drawled. "It was the King of Morocco. Cupcakes are too dainty for a Scotsman. Give him one, and he'll ask why didn't you shoot the wee cake's parents instead and serve that."
I smiled as Megan unhooked the side of her mixer and quietly retrieved the pair of Beretta subcompacts hidden inside, along with a pair of suppressors. Her mixer wouldn't work. Its innards had been sacrificed to give us storage. That had seemed a reasonable risk to Tia, since the team doing the searching down below wasn't likely to have access to electricity. We each screwed a suppressor in place, then tucked our handguns into underarm holsters. I plugged in my mixer, which did work. The loud whirr it put out gave us covering sound. I threw some ingredients into the mixing bowl just in case, then laid out the decorating tools. Advantageously, our little pantry had its own door into the main room. I moved over to peek out while Megan tore apart her mixer's power adapter and removed a small boxy device much like a mobile. I cracked the door to do a quick survey of the party. The kitchens were in the absolute center of the 71st level, which was important since a portion of the floor outside rotated. A revolving restaurant, one of those strange ideas from pre-Calamity that I sometimes had trouble believing were real. Once upon a time, ordinary people could have come up here for a nice meal while they looked over the city. The tower's pinnacle restaurant was like a wheel, with the hub remaining stationary and the floor rotating in a ring outside. The outer walls were stationary as well. The ceiling rose in places 2 more floors to the tower's roof. The partial levels above us were now being used only to position lighting. The transformation into salt had positively ruined the machinery for the floor, particularly the motors and wires. Getting the place rotating again apparently required the effort of a work crew, engineers, and a minor epic named Helium, who had levitation powers. Loophole went through the hassle every week, though, to make something special, something that would stand out. A very epic thing to do. I spotted the woman herself, sitting at one of the tables on the rotating portion. She had a pixie cut and a slender build. A nice compliment to the 1920s-style outfit she wore. The party up here was more subdued than the one on the first floor. No loud music, just a string quartet. People sat at tables draped in white, waiting for food. In other areas, the salt tables and chairs had been moved aside to allow dancing, but nobody was bothering with that. Instead, each table was its own little fiefdom, with an epic holding court, surrounded by sycophants. I picked out a series of minor epics, noting which ones were still alive, meaning they'd thrown their lot in with Prof rather than fleeing the city. Stormwind was there, surprisingly, a young Asian woman sitting on a dais. She had obviously weathered her time in Prof's prison and had been released. Prof had apparently paraded her around as he had in order to show that he was now dominant in Ildithia. But ultimately he needed her. Without her powers, the crops wouldn't grow, and luxuries and even basic necessities in the city would dry up. I shook my head. I couldn't see the entire room from my vantage, as it was shaped like a ring. But Prof wasn't in this half, and I doubted he was in the other half. He wasn't likely to attend a party like this.
"We're in position," Mizzy said softly over the line. "We've made it to the 70th level."
That was where Tia was being held, and was also where Prof's rooms would be. The two were on opposite sides of the building, though, so hopefully we'd have Tia in hand and be gone before he even realized we'd been here. Her original plan had included luring him out of his room with a distraction so she could grab his information without him knowing, but we didn't have to worry about that now.
"Roger," Cody said. "Nice work, Team Hip. Wait for David's or Megan's go-ahead before continuing."
"Yeah," Mizzy said. "No risk of us doing otherwise. This place is littered with security cameras. Infiltration suits won't be enough to get us any farther."
"We'll get ready for step three," I said. "Just let us..." I trailed off, my jaw dropping as I spotted something out in the main room.
"David?"
Cody asked. Someone had rotated into view, sitting on a salt throne and surrounded by women in tight dresses. A man in a long black coat, with dark hair that tumbled past his shoulders. He sat imperiously, hand resting on the hilt of a sword, which stood point down beside him like a scepter. Obliteration. The man who had destroyed Houston and Kansas City and tried to blow up Babylar. The tool that Regalia had used to push Prof into darkness. He was here. He met my eyes and smiled.
27. I ducked back into our pantry room, heart thumping, palms sweating. It was all right. I was wearing a false face. Obliteration wouldn't recognize me. He was just a creepy guy who would give that look to... Obliteration appeared next to me. Like always with his teleportation, he materialized in a flash of light. Megan cursed, stumbling backward, as Obliteration rested his hand on my shoulders.
"Welcome, killer of demons," he said.
I licked my lips. "Great epic. I think you have mistaken me for someone else."
"Ah, Steel Slayer," he said. "Your features may change, but your eyes and the hunger within them are the same. You have come to destroy Limelight. This is natural, for I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother."
Megan's gun clicked as she rested it against the side of Obliteration's head. She didn't shoot. It would draw attention to us, ruining the plan. Besides, he'd simply teleport away before the bullet hit. "What are you doing here?" I demanded.
"I was invited," Obliteration said, smiling.
Limelight sent for me, and I could not but agree to appear. His calling card was demanding.
Calling card? I said. Sparks! He has a motivator based on your powers.
Nighthawk had said that if you tried to build a device using a living epic's powers, it would work, but would cause them pain and draw them to it.
Yes, he did use one of those devices to summon me. He must wish for death, Steel Slayer, as we all do in the depths of our souls.
Sparks, Regalia must have made at least one more bomb from Obliteration's powers. One other than the ones for Babalar and Kansas City. A bomb Prof now had. Prof would have had to charge his with sunlight. I assumed that was what had drawn Obliteration. That meant that somewhere in this city was a device capable of destroying it in an instant. How terrible would it be if Prof gave up his humanity to protect Babalar, only to inflict the exact same destruction on Ildithia? Obliteration watched us, relaxed. When we'd parted last, it had been after a long chase in which he'd tried his best to kill me. He didn't seem to bear a grudge, fortunately. But before we'd parted, I'd been forced to reveal something to him. "You know the secret of the weaknesses," I said.
"Indeed," he answered. "Thank you very much for that. Their dreams betray them, and so my holy work may proceed. I need only discover their fears."
"You mean to rid this world of epics?" Megan said.
"No," I said, holding Obliteration's eyes. "He means to rid this world of everyone."
"Our paths align, Steel Slayer," Obliteration said to me. "We will need to face one another eventually, but today you may proceed with your task. God will make of this world a glass, but only after the burning has come. And we are his fires."
"Damn, you're creepy," Megan said. He gave her a smile.
"And there shall be no night there, and they need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord God giveth them light."
With that, he vanished. As always, when he teleported away, he left a statue-like image of himself created from glowing white ceramic that shattered a second later, then quickly evaporated. I sagged against the doorway, and Megan caught me by the arm, propping me up. "Sparks! As if there weren't enough to worry about already!"
"Where are those pastries?"
a voice shouted outside.
"Move, you slonces! She's demanding cupcakes!"
The tall chef burst into our pantry. Megan spun toward him, tucking her gun behind her back. And suddenly the pan full of cupcakes from earlier had intricate frosting on the tops. The tall chef let out a relieved breath.
"Thank heavens for that," he said, grabbing the pan. "Let me know if you two need anything."
He moved away. I watched, horrified, worried that once it got too far from Megan, the frosting would vanish. She rested her hand on the counter, then slumped, and it was my turn to grab her. "Megan?" I asked. "I think I managed to make those permanent," she said. "Sparks, that's more than I've done in a long time. I can feel the headache coming on already." Her skin felt clammy under my fingers, and she'd gone pale. That said, it was remarkable. "Imagine what you could do with more practice." "Well, we'll see." She paused. "David, I think I found a dimension where you're not an expert in guns, but in pastries."
"Wow."
"Yeah," she said, righting herself. "Yet, in all of infinity, I don't think I've ever found a dimension where you can kiss worth a hill of beans."
"That's unfair," I said. "You didn't complain last night."
"You stuck your tongue in my ear, David."
"That's way romantic. Saw it in a movie once. It's like a passionate wet willy."
"All y'all do realize your line is open to me, right?" Cody asked.
"Shut up, Cody,"
Megan said, tucking her gun back into its place under her arm. Warn Abraham and Mizzy, we had a run-in with obliteration. We're moving on step 3 now.
Roger, Cody said. And David?
Yeah?
Y'all ever stick your tongues in my ear, and I'll shoot you in your bagpipes.
Thanks for the warning, I said, then proceeded to undress. I was wearing slacks under my bulky jeans and a button-up shirt underneath my jacket. Megan tossed me her jacket. I pulled out the lining, which reversed the jacket into a tuxedo coat. Her sweater came off next, revealing the gown she had bunched up around her waist. Off came her trousers. She wore tight biker shorts beneath. And then she yanked down the gown skirt, covering her legs. I tried not to gawk, or, well, I tried to gawk covertly. Megan's sleek red gown was all sparkly and gorgeous and, well, it really accented her curves, like how a nice cheek piece with shadow lines accents a perfect rifle stock. Unfortunately, she wasn't wearing her own face. That ruined the effect. But still, that neckline. I caught her looking at me and blushed. Only then did I realize she didn't seem to have noticed my ogling, but was instead nodding to herself, a faint smile on her lips.
"Are you staring at my chest?" I asked.
"What?" she said. "Stay focused, knees."
"Awesome," I thought, tossing on my jacket.
"Take this," she said, handing me the small box she'd removed from her mixer's power adapter. "Dresses like this don't have much in the way of storage."
"Don't you usually..."
I nodded toward her cleavage. "I've already got my mobile stuffed in there," she said. "And before you ask, no, there wasn't more room for any mini-grenades. I strapped those to my thigh. A girl's gotta be prepared."
"Sparks, I love this woman!"
I tucked the box into a pocket, and the two of us stepped to the door. Megan concentrated, transforming our features again. I felt a warping as it happened, a blink of another world, another reality. In it, the people we'd been disguised as walked away, a woman with the face Megan had been wearing, and a man with a solemn expression and wide lips. Gone were the two pastry chefs. What stepped out into the main room was instead a pair of rich dinner guests wearing a different pair of false faces. For a moment there, I'd seen what Megan must when she used her powers, the ripples of time and space that made up our reality. Megan slipped her arm through mine, and we started to stroll through the large disc of a room on the upper walkway, a portion that didn't rotate. I noted that Obliteration had returned to his throne, a coconut in hand, of all things. He'd probably teleported somewhere and fetched one. So far as I'd been able to discover, there was no distance limitation to his teleportation. He simply had to have seen the place, or at least had it described, to get there. He glanced toward me and nodded.
"Sparks, he saw through this disguise too?"
I didn't buy his line about my eyes. He had some kind of power he was keeping hidden. Maybe he was a dowser and could sense epics. Though this room was filled with epics, how would he recognize the two of us? Troubled, I tried to keep my mind on our task.
"Must work," Cody said in my ear. "Keep it up. A quarter rotation through the room to go."
"Team Hip still good?" I asked.
"Ready and waiting,"
Cody said. We continued, passing close to Loophole's table. The lean, short-haired woman was shrinking servers and making them dance on her table for the amusement of her gathered crowd. I'd always wondered. Megan steered me onward as I started to linger.
"Her powers are awesome," I whispered to her. "She has incredible control of what she can shrink and how she does it."
"Yeah, well, ask for an autograph later," Megan said.
Are you jealous? Because your powers are way better than..."
"Focus, David." "Right." We walked around the room until we approached a small door marked with a restroom sign. It was the central hub, same as the kitchens. We stepped in, and as Tia's plans indicated, beyond was a small service hallway with a restroom on either side. Straight ahead was our goal, a nondescript white door, obviously important. The other doors were still salt, heavy and awkward to move. This one was wood, with a silvery doorknob. I got out a set of lockpicks. "This would be easier if you could swap the door for one that wasn't locked," I said, working on the knob.
"I might be able to do that," she said, "but I don't know if I could make it permanent. Which would mean that you'd enter through the door, step into another dimension, and change things there. Then it would all swap back once you stepped out."
"You fixed the cupcakes," I said.
"Yeah," she said softly, looking over her shoulder. "This is new territory for me, David. Always before, if I pushed this far, I lost myself. I often ended up dead. It's not a good mix, knowing that you're immortal and having no sense of responsibility. Perfect recklessness."
I got the door unlocked. It was an easy one, nowhere near as difficult as what Abraham and Mizzy would have to deal with. This door wasn't locked to keep out determined interlopers. It was here to prevent the casual passerby from getting hurt. I swung the door open. Beyond were a large generator and an engine that turned the floor. Megan and I slipped into the chamber before anyone entered the hallway to use the restrooms, and I took out my mobile for some light. It was cramped, and the floor was coated with powdery salt.
"Sparks," Megan said. "How do they get this all in here? They redo this every week?"
"It's not as tough as it sounds," I said. "Loophole shrinks all this and carries it up in her pocket. She then shrinks some workers and sends them into the walls and floor with drills to place the wires she needs. With helium levitating the floor just enough to keep it from grinding, they can get it spinning again." I knelt beside the machinery, picking out the engine. It was connected to some wires and metal gears below.
"That's the power cell," Megan said, pointing at one part of the machine. "With a backup diesel generator."
"We didn't plan on a backup," I said. "Is that going to be a problem?"
"Nah," she said, holding out her hand.
I placed the box from earlier into it.
"We're fooling with the cords, not the generator itself. We should be good."
I held out my mobile, the instructions for clipping on the device pulled up. I held this for her as she attached our little box to the proper wires. When we stepped back, I could barely tell it was there.
"Step three complete," I announced, satisfied. "We're pulling out of the generator room."
"Roger," Cody said. "Tapping Abraham and Mizzy into the main line. Be ready, you two. Let Megan and David extract, and we'll move to step four."
"Roger,"
Abraham said.
"Groovy,"
Mizzy said. "There's that word again," I said, pushing out into the restroom hallway. "I tried looking it up. Something to do with record grooves? It..." I broke off, suddenly face to face with a serving girl leaving one of the restrooms. She gaped at me and then at Megan.
"What are you two doing here?"
she asked.
"Calamity."
"We were looking for the restrooms," I said.
"But they're right."
"Those are the peasant restrooms," Megan said from behind.
I stumbled out of her way as she strode past me.
"You expect me to use the facilities of the common servants?"
Megan wore the mantle of an epic like it had been designed with her in mind. She stood up taller, eyes wide, and flames began to flicker in the hallway.
"I didn't,"
the server began.
"You question me?"
Megan demanded.
"You dare?"
The server shrank down, lowering her eyes, and fell silent.
"Better," Megan said. "Where might I find the proper rooms?"
"These are the only ones that are maintained. I'm sorry, I can..."
"No, I've had enough of you. Away and be glad I don't want to upset our great lord by leaving a body for him to deal with."
The woman scampered out into the main party room. I cocked an eyebrow at Megan as the flames faded.
"Nice."
"It was too easy," she said. "I've been abusing my powers. Let's get Tia and pull out."
I nodded, leading the way back into the restaurant proper.
"We're out," I said, as the two of us stepped down onto the rotating floor. I couldn't sense anything. It was moving too slowly to be noticeable.
We took up position near a table, doing our best to look as innocuous as possible.
"In position,"
Abraham said.
"On your mark."
"Cody,"
I said.
"All looks good. Proceed."
"G Give us a count of three, Abraham said.
I took a deep breath and pressed the mobile in my pocket, activating the device attached to the generator. Any of us could do it, as it was connected to all of our mobiles, but we decided that Megan and I should be in charge of it. It would be easier for Mizzy and Abraham to vocalize what they wanted than to get out their mobiles, risk the light involved, and activate the device on their own. As soon as I pushed the button, the lights flickered off, and the revolving restaurant ground to a stop. Voices murmured and dishes clattered as I counted to three, then removed my finger. The lights came back on, and the machinery whirred to life. We started to move again. Nervous, I watched for a sign of alarm. None came. Apparently one of the difficulties in working with machinery that had been hacked together a day ago was that breakages and brownouts were common. Tia's plan made use of this.
Perfect, Abraham said. We're past the first bank of cameras.
No alarm on any radio frequency I can find, Cody said. Only some security guards grumbling and hoping Prof doesn't blame them for the brownout. Tia, lass, you're a genius.
Let's hope you can give her the compliment in person soon, I said to Cody. Abraham, let us know when your team is at the next camera. We're on a timer now. The chefs are going to start wondering where their pastry makers went, and people are eventually going to go inspect the generators.
Roger.
Megan and I remained in position. From here on out, the plan was supposed to take under 10 minutes. It was tough to wait. Mizzy and Abraham were crawling through guard-infested hallways, while the two of us were supposed to stand up here and look innocent. We tried, and failed, to work out a way to get down and meet them, so Megan could use her powers to help with the last portions of the infiltration. Perhaps that was for the best. Megan was looking haggard, rubbing her forehead, growing testy. I fetched us some drinks from a servant standing near the bar, but then realized that they probably had alcohol in them, which was a very bad idea right now. We needed to be alert. Instead, I grabbed a cupcake off a passing tray. Might as well sample an alternate dimension David's handiwork. I stopped halfway to our table. Had I heard? I turned around, trying to pick the voice out of those chattering in the crowd. Yes, I did know that voice. Prof was here. I was mildly surprised. Socializing wasn't exactly a Prof thing, yet that deep voice was unmistakable. There was ample reason to stay far away from him, but at the same time I was wearing a new face, and our experiences on the first day showed that he was fooled by Megan's illusions. Maybe it would be worth scouting to find out where exactly he was and what he was saying.
"Prof's here," I said over the line.
"Sparks," Cody said. "You sure?"
"Yes," I said, moving to where I could see him standing beside one of the windows. "I'm going to approach with care and watch him. If the guards spot Abraham and Mizzy, he'll be alerted first. Thoughts?"
"I agree," Megan said over the line. "The two of us aren't doing anything else useful up here. This could give us important intel."
"Yes," Cody said. Then he paused. "But be careful, lad."
"Sure, sure. I'll be careful as a diabetic slug in a candy factory." "Or, you know," Megan said, "a slug in Ildithia."
"That too. You going to back me up?"
"On your tail now, knees."
I took a deep breath, then crossed the room toward Prof. 28. I slid up to a tall table near where Prof was speaking. A cluster of people surrounded him. Lesser epics, judging by the ones I recognized. Prof had a notepad out and had settled down at a table. Others gave the group a wide berth. I leaned on the tall table, trying to look nonchalant. I scratched at my ear, flipping on the directional audio amplification on my earpiece.
"Larsener must be found,"
Prof said. I could barely pick him up.
"Until we accomplish this, we can do nothing."
The others in the group nodded.
"I want Fabergé and Dragdown to spread rumors,"
Prof said, writing on his notepad.
claim there is an underground resistance movement against me, and it's looking for a leader. Surveillance is your duty, Inkwell. You'll watch the various powerful family neighborhoods. One of them has to be sheltering him, like the stingrays were doing for our captive below. We attack in two ways. The promise of a rebellion to draw him out, mixed with the threat of discovery. Fuego, I want you to keep working with your dowser, doing sweeps through the city. We'll make a big show of where we're looking, and expect Larsener to move. We flush him out, like dogs in a field scaring pheasants.
I leaned against my table, suddenly feeling as if I'd been punched in the gut. Prof had put together a team. It made sense. Prof had years of practice organizing and leading teams of reckoners, and he was very good at hunting epics. But hearing him talk to these people like he'd once talked to us? It was heartbreaking. How easily he'd replaced his friends and freedom fighters with a team of tyrants and murderers.
"We're at the next corner," Abraham whispered through my earpiece. "Tia's maps show hidden cameras here."
"Yeah, I spot 'em," Mizzy said. "Conspicuous pictures hung on the wall to hide a hollowed-out section of salt stone. Hold this one until we give word."
"Roger," Megan said, dimming on Cody's mark.
"Proceed,"
Cody said. The lights flickered, dimmed, and went out.
"Again?"
Prof demanded.
"Engineers must have messed up the installation,"
one of the epics said.
"Could be grinding against the old salt gears and machinery."
"Through,"
Abraham said. Megan let go of the button, and the lights returned. Prof stood up, seeming dissatisfied.
"My Lord Limelight," said a young female epic. "I can find Larsener. Just give me leave."
Prof turned to study her, then settled back down in his chair.
"You are slow to come to my service."
"Those quick to give allegiance are quick to change it, my lord." "Do I recognize her?"
"Cody," I whispered. "Is there anything in my notes about a female epic in Ildithia with blonde hair? Wears it in a braid? She may be 20 to 25 years old."
"Let me see,"
Cody said.
"And what would you do,"
Prof said to the woman,
"if you found him?"
"I'd kill him for you, my lord,"
Prof snorted.
"And in so doing, destroy everything I'm working toward, fool woman."
She blushed. Prof reached into his pocket, taking something out, and setting it on the table. A small cylindrical device, perhaps the size of an old battery. I recognized it. I had one in my own pocket. Nighthawk had given it to me. I reached in and felt it, to reassure myself it was still there. A tissue sample incubator.
"You have my leave to hunt him,"
Prof said.
"But if you do find him, do not kill him. Get me some of his blood or skin in this. He dies only after I know that the sample is good. If anyone kills him before that, I will destroy them."
I shivered.
"You there,"
he said louder.
I jumped, looking to find that he was pointing right at me.
He waved me over. I checked behind me, then looked back at him.
He was looking at me. Calamity! He waved again, more impatiently, expression darkening.
"Guys, this could be bad,"
I whispered, rounding my table and walking toward Prof.
"What are you doing?"
Megan demanded. She'd sat up nearby, leaning against a railing and sipping at a drink.
"He called for me."
"We're at Tia's door,"
Abraham said.
"Two guards. We're going to have to engage them."
"Prepare for another blackout," Cody said. "David, what's your status?"
"Crapping my pants,"
I whispered, then stepped up to Prof's table.
He gave me a brief glance, then pointed at my hand. I frowned and looked down.
Only then did I realize that I was still holding the uneaten cupcake. I blinked, then handed it over. Prof took it, then dismissed me with a wave.
I was all too happy to obey. I scuttled back, then leaned against the table, trying to relax my strained nerves.
"Situation stable," Megan said, sounding relieved. "False alarm. Abraham, you ready?"
"Yes. I'll give a mark." "Proceed," Cody whispered.
The lights went out again, causing Prof to curse. I closed my eyes. This was the moment. Would Tia be behind those doors?
"We're in,"
Abraham said.
"Both guards are down. Dead, I'm afraid."
I breathed out softly as Megan restored the lights. Two dead guards. Reckon her protocol was to minimize such things. As Prof had always said, we wouldn't get far killing our own. The guards weren't innocent. They implicitly condoned Tia's capture, and likely her torture. But in the end, two normal people, just trying to survive in the new, terrible world, were dead because of us. Let the prize be worth the cost.
"Tia?"
I whispered.
"She's here," Nizzy said. "Abraham's freeing her from her bonds right now. Doesn't look too bad."
A short time later, a familiar female voice spoke over the line.
"Huh. You slonces actually did it."
"How are you?" I asked, sharing a relieved look with Megan.
"He said that some members of his team were growing impatient and had me tied up to think about my answers, but he didn't hurt me."
She paused.
"There's still a lot of John there. I wouldn't have assumed, I mean..."
"I know," I said, turning to watch Prof interact with his epics, though I wasn't angled right to catch what he was saying.
"I almost believed him, David. Believed that he hadn't turned. That this was all part of some necessary ploy to fight the epics."
"He knows what to say," I told her. "He's not fully gone, Tia. We'll get him back." She didn't reply as Megan and I started toward the elevators. If anyone questioned us, I'd pretend to be feeling ill, and we'd take the next ride down. They wouldn't check us against the guest list down there, like they would have if we'd tried to go up that way. Easy up, easy down. I almost felt like I'd been slacking through the mission, with Abraham and Mizzy doing the difficult work.
"Objective achieved," I said. "Full extraction, everyone."
"You have the data already?"
Tia asked.
"Data?"
I said.
"From John's computers."
"No," I said. "We came for you, not for that."
"And I appreciate it, but David, I've been talking to him and I got some things out of him. We were right. Regalia left a plan for John to follow. He's here at her bidding. Coming to Ildithia, it's part of some kind of master plan. One we need to discover."
"I agree, but..."
"Wait." Behind me, the room had suddenly hushed. Megan's hand tightened on my arm, and we turned around. Prof had stood up, quieting everyone around him. Tia started to object to what I'd said, but I cut her off.
"Something's wrong. What did you do?"
"Nothing," Mizzy said. "We just stepped out of Tia's rooms. We're on our way to the elevator shaft."
Prof gestured sharply toward the elevators, saying something I couldn't make out. The urgency in his motions was unmistakable.
"Abraham, Mizzy," I said. "You've been discovered. Repeat, you've been discovered. Get to an exit right now."
29. I pushed toward the main guest elevators, but was surprised when Megan held me back. I looked at her, and she in turn nodded toward Prof's team of lackeys. They were moving in the same direction. They'd have priority. We'd be shouted out of the way.
"Stairs?"
Megan mouthed. I nodded.
They were in the hub of the circular chamber, so we began to move in that direction, trying not to look conspicuous. If Abraham's team had been spotted, then it was even more imperative that Megan and I remain hidden.
"Backtracking for emergency escape," Abraham said, breathing heavily. "Those cameras are going to spot us. Even if they've been alerted, I'd rather they not know which hallways we're in."
"Killing the lights," I said. "Move to night vision."
"Roger."
I turned off the lights with the mobile, causing a general outcry in the restaurant.
"What tipped him off?"
Mizzy asked.
"He must have planted a bug of some sort on me," Tia said. one set to trigger if I left my room.
He could be tracking you, I said.
I know, she said. Little we can do about that right now, though. I felt so helpless. Megan and I sidled up to the room's inner ring, moving toward the stairwell.
David, Tia said, Jonathan's chambers are on this level. I'm going to take Abraham and Mizzy and go get that data. We can grab it during the blackout confusion. They'll never expect us to be going that way.
I stopped in place. Tia, no! Abort! Get out!
Can't do that.
Why? I said. Tia, you've always been the careful one. This mission is going to hell. We need to extract.
You do realize what's in that data, David.
Regalia's plans?
More than that. She saw Calamity, David. Regalia interacted with him, or her, or whatever it is. John boasted to me of what he'd seen.
David, there are pictures. Sparks. Pictures of Calamity? The Epic?
All the secrets we've been hunting could be on that data drive, Tia said. The answers we've been chasing all our lives. Surely you, of all people, can see it. My plan got you this far. We need to take the last step. That data is worth the risk.
From this angle, I could see through a glass window on the outside rim of the building. Calamity was there, of course. It was always there. Heaven's bullet hole. Calamity. An Epic. The ultimate gifter? Would we find answers in that spot of garish light? Would we find out why all this had begun? The meaning of epics. The truth?
No, Tia, I said. We've been discovered, and my team is in serious danger. We can't grab that data right now. We'll get it later.
We're so close, she said. I'm not leaving it, David. I'm sorry. This team is mine, and as the senior reckoner, I...
Senior reckoner? Megan cut in. You abandoned us.
Says the traitor.
Megan stiffened. She stood beside me, my hand on her shoulder, but I couldn't see much of her. The room was completely black, with partygoers knocking into things, voices raised in confusion. Across the room, an epic burst into red lightning, giving the place a glow. Soon, a second epic started glowing with a calmer blue light.
Tia, I said, trying to be rational. I'm in command of this mission, and I'm telling you to extract. That information isn't worth risking my team. Abraham, Mizzy, get out of there.
Deathly silence came over the line. I could imagine them one floor down looking Tia in the eye, considering.
Roger that, David, Abraham said. Team hip extracting.
I'm with him, Mizzy said. This isn't the time for a power struggle, Tia. Let's get out of here.
Tia muttered something inaudible, but made no further argument. Megan tugged on my arm, leading me the last distance toward the door to the stairwell, which we could now make out by the light of several glowing epics. Unfortunately, with the power out, Prof's team was gathering there as well and blocked the way.
David?
Mizzy asked over the line a short time later.
What about you two?
Keep on with your emergency extraction plan, I said quietly. We have false identities. We're safe up here.
We're ready,
Abraham said.
Won't need the inflatables. Regrettably, we have something superior.
Go, Cody said. You should be clear.
I thought I heard a window being blown open below, or at least felt the vibrations.
Parachutes!
Someone in our room shouted.
Outside!
People rushed for the windows. Megan and I backed away. Prof's epics shoved past us to a window, and then the blonde woman I thought I recognized waved over several guards. She glanced at Prof, who stood with arms folded, lit by the glowing epics nearby. He nodded.
Bring them down,
the woman said, pointing. The guards started shooting. The window shattered amid the cacophony of indoor weapons fire. It was like firecrackers, if they'd been stapled to your head and stuffed in your ears. Muzzles flashed, illuminating the dark room like strobe lights. I winced, backing away as the guards filled Abraham's parachutes with holes. Fortunately, the action at the window had drawn everyone's attention that way. Megan and I were able to retreat toward the stairwell at the center of the room.
Parachutes down, my lord,
the blonde epic said, turning to Prof. We didn't have long until they discovered that the chutes were attached to the corpses of the dead guards.
Abraham, Mizzy, and Tia would be using the distraction to reach the elevator doors, then ride their wire climbers down the cables and exit the building.
"We're at the elevators,"
Abraham said.
"Go,"
Cody said.
"Right."
I waited a tense few moments.
"We've hit the second floor,"
Abraham finally said, out of breath.
"Stopping here."
"That was quite the ride," Mizzy added. "Like a zip line, except straight down."
"At least the wire didn't break on you halfway," I noted.
"What?"
Mizzy asked.
"Nothing."
"David,"
Abraham said, composed again.
"There's a problem. Tia didn't come with us."
"She what?"
"Tia remained above,"
Abraham said.
"When we jumped into the elevator shaft, she ran the other way."
Toward Prof's room. Calamity's shadow, that woman was stubborn. After all the work we'd done, she was going to get herself killed.
"Continue your extraction," I said. "Tia is on her own now. Nothing we can do."
"Roger."
After all the work we'd gone through to get to her, she did this? Part of me couldn't blame her. I was tempted by that information, too. The rest of me was irate with her for forcing me into this position, where I had to make the call to leave a team member behind. The lights suddenly came on again. The ground lurched under the dining tables. Megan and I, near the hub, were on the non-rotating portion. To our left, a short, balding epic from Prof's team approached around the hub, triumphantly raising the dampening device we'd attached to the generator. Prof looked at it, then shouted,
"They're here! Secure both the elevators and the steps! Wiper, sweep the room!"
Wiper? That was a name I recognized.
"Oh," Cody said.
"Right, Wiper. I found that epic for you, David. Sorry, lad. Had it in hand right as everything went to whales in a handbasket. Wiper, her powers..."
"Are to disrupt other epic's abilities," I whispered. "Short them out for a second." A flash of light pulsed through the room. In that moment, I turned and found Megan looking at me. Not the false face she'd created, but Megan herself. Beautiful though that was, it wasn't what I'd wanted to see at all. Our disguises were gone.
30. For better or worse, my time with the epics had seriously helped me deal with being surprised. I was almost as quick as Megan was in pulling out my handgun. Pointedly, while we both moved by instinct, neither of us fired on Prof. Megan gunned down the three-armed soldiers who had been firing out the window. Our little pop guns acquitted themselves well for compacts. I shot Wiper. She died a lot more easily than most epics I'd killed. In fact, watching her drop in a spray of blood almost surprised me more than losing our disguises. I'd grown used to epics being exceptionally tough. It was sometimes difficult to remember that the majority of them had only one or two powers, not a full suite. Prof roared in outrage. I didn't dare look at him. He'd been intimidating enough when he hadn't been trying to kill me. Instead, I sprinted for the open stairwell door and gunned down the surprised epic standing inside. Megan followed me.
"Duck!"
she shouted at me, as people in the room behind us pulled out guns. A few fired. I dove through the doors. Nobody outside got off more than two or three shots before an explosion rocked the room, cracking saltstone walls and sending a shower of dust raining down. I coughed, blinking salt from my eyes, and struggled to my feet. It had been one of Megan's grenades. I managed to grab her outstretched hand and join her in running down the steps.
"Sparks!"
she said.
"I can't believe we're alive!"
"Wiper," I said. "Her bursts negate epic powers, specifically external usages, like Prof's force fields. Her burst left him momentarily unable to trap us."
"Could we have killed him?"
I asked.
"No.
Wiper would have been executed by one high epic or another long ago if her powers were that strong. She can't, well, couldn't, remove an epic's innate protections, just fiddle with manifestations for a second or two. Force fields, illusions, that sort of thing." Megan nodded. The stairwell was dark. Nobody had thought to hang lights in here. But we heard when people ventured in from above. Megan pulled back against the wall, looking up. I could make her out by the light trickling down from above.
I nodded to her unasked question when she glanced at me. We needed time to plan, and that meant keeping the pressure off us. She pulled her other mini-grenade from her thigh case, then activated it and tossed it upward. The second explosion sent chunks of salt stone tumbling down on us, and seemed to have broken an entire section of steps above. I nodded to her, and we looked down the stairwell. There was no way we'd be able to take this stairway down 70 floors without finding ourselves trapped at the bottom. We needed another way out.
"David?" Cody's voice. "I spotted some explosions up there. Y'all all right?"
"No," I said over the line. "We've been compromised." Abraham swore softly in French.
"We left the backup equipment, David. Where are you?"
Abraham and Mizzy had brought extra wire climbers, in case there were more prisoners than Tia, or in case Megan and I joined them. Mission parameters called for emergency equipment to be left behind, just in case. "We're right by the door to floor 70," I said. "Where's the equipment?"
"Black backpack," Abraham said. "Hidden in the air vent near the service elevator. But David, that level was flooding with guards when we were leaving."
It would also be the same floor where Tia had given them the slip to go after Prof. Stata. I wasn't sure I could save her, though. Sparks. Sparks, I wasn't sure I could save myself at this point.
"Radio chatter went silent right after Abraham was spotted," Cody said. "They must have some kind of secure signal to use in emergencies. And they won't be using Nighthawk mobiles. You can bet your kilt on that."
Great. Well, at least with that pack, Megan and I had a chance. My back to the wall beside the door onto the 70th floor, I took out my mobile. Its light bathed us as we examined the map that Cody helpfully sent of this level. We were marked as a green dot. The elevator, red. That red dot was halfway across the sparking building. Lovely. I memorized the route, noticing Prof's chambers. We'd travel close to it, down a hallway right outside his suite. I glanced at Megan, and she nodded. We slid the door open, and Megan leaped out, gun ready, checking right and then left. I followed, keeping watch down the right hallway, as she scouted ahead to the left. A string of light bulbs hung along the ceiling, revealing absurdly beautiful waves of red salt shot through the otherwise black and gray walls. It looked like a pigeon on fire. I exhaled. No guards yet. The two of us continued down the left hallway, passing closed doors that I knew led into luxurious apartments. By the time we'd reached the end of the hall, I was feeling pretty good about our chances. Maybe the guards had all been pulled out to search other floors or to protect Prof upstairs. Then the wall about 10 feet in front of us disintegrated. We stumbled back as the night wind whipped in through a new gap in the outside wall of the building, blowing in more salt dust from 70 floors up in the air. I raised my hand against the salt, blinking. Prof hovered outside on a glowing green disc. He stepped off it and into the building, feet crunching on salt dust. Megan cursed, backing away, gun out in front of her. I remained in position and searched Prof's face, hoping for some sign of warmth, pity even. I found only a sneer. He raised his hands at his sides, summoning lances of green light, spears of force field to impale us. In that moment, I felt something unexpected. Pure anger. Anger at Prof for not being strong enough to resist the darkness. The emotion had been hidden within me, tucked away behind a series of rationalizations. He'd saved Babalar. Regalia had manipulated him into his fall. The things he did weren't his fault. None of that stopped me from being angry, furious at him anyway. He was supposed to be better than this. He was supposed to have been invincible. Something trembled inside me, like an ancient leviathan stirring in its slumber within a den of water and stone. The hair on my arms stood up and my muscles tensed, as if I were straining to lift something heavy. I looked into Prof's eyes and saw my death reflected back at me. And something within me said, no. That sense of confidence was gone in a moment, replaced with sheer terror. We were going to die. I leaped to the side, dodging a spear of light. I rolled as Megan jumped back against the wall, managing to get out of the way of another razor-sharp lance of force field.
I tried to scramble down the hallway, but smashed right into a glowing green wall. I groaned, turning to see Prof studying me with a look of disdain. He raised a hand to destroy me. Something tiny hit him in the side of the head. He started, then turned, and another one smacked him in the forehead. Bullets?
Oh, yeah, Cody said over the line. Did y'all see that? Who just sniped a guy at 1,000 yards? I did.
The bullets didn't penetrate Prof's defensive powers, though they did seem to annoy him. I scrambled over to Megan.
Can you do anything? I asked.
A force field sprang up, surrounding both me and Megan, gouging out a large chunk of the saltstone floor as well.
Sparks! This was it! We were going to be crushed like Val and XL.
I reached for Megan, wanting to be holding her as it happened. She had adopted a look of concentration, teeth clenched, eyes staring sightlessly. The air shimmered. Then, someone else appeared inside the globe with us. I blinked in surprise. The newcomer was a teenage girl with red hair worn short in a pixie cut. She had on a plain pair of jeans and an old denim jacket. She gasped and looked up at the force field globe surrounding us. Prof closed his hand into a fist to make the globe shrink. But the young woman thrust her hands to the sides. I felt a thrumming vibration, like a voice with no sound. I knew that sound. The tensors? Prof's force field disintegrated, dropping us to the ground. I lost my balance, though the young woman landed easily.